Welcome to Fresh Voices, ILTA's podcast series on careers in legal tech. The episode you're about to hear is particularly relevant to professionals in Europe. I am joined today by Leanne.
Hi, I'm Leanne Williams, business analyst and founder of the Inclusive Tech community.
So ILTA has collaborated with Inclusive Tech to deliver this series to showcase how different people can get into the variety of roles in legal technology. So we'll be along the way, we'll be sharing some stories about real people doing real technology roles to see if you can get some learnings from that for your individual path and career. So I'll hand over to Leanne now to introduce this particular episode.
Yes, well, each episode of the podcast, we will be discussing our thoughts and views on the latest hot topics, and we'll be joined by someone from the tech industry to give us a little insight into their role. So our theme today is thriving post-lockdown. Very relevant. We're joined by Kurt. Welcome, Kurt. Thanks for joining us. We're going to learn a little bit more about your journey later, but did you want to quickly just introduce yourself?
Sure, yeah. Thank you for having me. My name's Kurt Byrne. I'm a recent-ish graduate from the University of Manchester, where I studied IT management for business. I've found myself working in a few law firms since then, so I'll let you know how it's gone.
So Kurt, one of the things I definitely want to get stuck into early on is you actually started your role during lockdown. Wow. So what is it like starting a job during lockdown? Your first day at the office is at home.
Yes, it was very bizarre. So I started in September. Obviously, all my inductions were online through Teams and Zoom like this is now. And it seems quite normal now that we're in this conversation talking about it. But back then, my first exposure to it was, yeah, very, very bizarre. Trying to forge relationships with, you know, not only your team, but the wider business was quite difficult initially. I took it for granted, really, at the time. I mean, initially, it was almost quite exciting that you got the opportunity to work from home. But I've only been into the office now probably 5 or 6 times since I started in September. It is very strange because you believe you build these really close relationships through Teams, and then you see somebody in person and you're like, well, actually, I've never met you before.
And all did you of always it is... feel like a new starter again when you went into the
yeah,
office?
Yeah, definitely. I'd revert back again because you see people who have had years of, you know, relationship building in office. Yeah. And then you surround yourself with those people and you just like, I don't know a lot about you at all, really. Yeah, it's really quite difficult to forge these kind of meaningful relationships is quite difficult because, you know, Teams, as collaborative as it is very bizarre because, you know, you probably know more than me. You look at your Outlook and you see, you know, oh, I've got half an hour with these people and that's essentially all you have. Yeah. And if you miss anything in that time, you can't just say, oh, you know, I'm stand up and bring it back up and have that like informal chat after, because you know your time is done. So
it's so funny, I was in the office yesterday actually, and someone sat next to me was struggling to get access, and I was like, oh, just so you know, like this is what you do. I just thought if she wasn't there next to me, maybe she'd have gone around the houses.
Yeah. That doesn't exist at all, does it, in Teams, unfortunately. Yes. I mean, it's amazing and it's got every company in the world through this difficult time, you know. But those little things, those little kind of natural conversations that you you take for granted in the office is not a possibility. So, yeah, it's been very bizarre. But I've been using the technology to its extent. I'd like to think I've made a success of it anyway up until now.
So I'd be keen to get your thoughts. I feel like this shouldn't be a controversial question, but it is. But camera off or camera on? Because when I ask this question, some people are very, no, it's fine, have your camera off. But I'm very pro camera. And for a new joiner starting in lockdown, if you weren't pro camera, then I applaud you.
No. I was, it was quite bizarre, really, because since I joined in September, I've had two distinct roles with the firm. So I started as a service desk analyst, which is more IT technician type, where obviously people call you up. And during that time, I was actually camera off because we were a general helpline. So you call the number and it goes out to 6 people. But every time I would call somebody back, I would always be camera on, because I'd want to make that kind of relationship with them and, you know, open up that conversation. Because when you're talking to people with no camera, it's just so bizarre. You could be anyone, you could be doing anything. It's really, really quite ridiculous, actually. But I'm 100% now a camera on type of person anyway, because I think for me personally, it puts me at a lot of ease. You know, you can see the person you're talking to. You don't have all these kind of inhibitions or preconceptions of, you know, you don't have to make assumptions. You can see who you're talking to. And even though it's kind of virtual eye contact, there's a bit of kind of body language that, you know, is brought into it, which is always helpful to read the room, so to speak.
And for the past year, it's been the closest thing to human contact when it's been locked down. So I don't know, Mercedes, exactly. Your stance, pro camera, anti camera, or no preference?
I think the general rule I have is I think about, if this was in normal times, would this be a phone call or a meeting? So if the meeting is meant to be a meeting where I'm introducing myself to someone, then I'd have my camera on. But if it's more like a progress call or just a check-in, I usually tend to prefer camera off, because I find it helps me focus. Because like what Kurt said, you sometimes just have 30 minutes, and because you don't tend to have these calls that much often, you can get caught up in the, oh my God, so you did this. Like, obviously when you're seeing a person, you're like, is that your new dog? I find it. a lot more, right? And then you're like, oh, I've only got 10 minutes. Whereas if it's just a call and you can't see them, you tend to just focus on what they're saying. And then, so it's different, but I like the choice of both, I think,
Yeah. But then how do you feel like now, specifically right now, people are slowly going back into the office? I've been in a couple of times. Kurt, how do you feel now you are going back? Do you feel like working from home was the one, or?
Well, to be honest, I like the social contact, to be honest. And it just happened to be that my first day back in the office coincided with the pubs opening as well. I made use of both opportunities. So I actually got to meet my new manager for the first time in person, even though I feel like we're really close anyway, prior to actually meeting. So I got to meet him and my, you know, the wider team. We all got together and we had this kind of brainstorm session, which again is very difficult to do online. So we literally had a whiteboard and circled everything, and we had, you know, thoughts and everything and potential next actions. And that was just done within, you know, half an hour. When you try to do that online, you've got a whole host of different technologies you could use. And then, oh, someone's internet's unstable, and oh, you can't hear me, I'm repeating myself. And these little things get in the way. So that was a real positive for me. And I'd definitely be up for having like a hybrid, maybe 2 days a week, 1 day a week going into the office. Because at the same time as well, I have very much enjoyed not paying hundreds of pounds a week to pay to commute and lose 2 hours a day, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's a thing that needs to be kind of brought away from this, is that, you know, people can work from home effectively. I'm not saying that I'm completely against, you know, going back in. I actually enjoy it, so I'm up for that. The next opportunity I do have to go in, I will make use of it, because there's people in the office that I've actually been able to forge really close friendships with, actually. So seeing them is a plus of going into the office. So yeah, I'm all for it.
In the theme of our thriving post-lockdown, I feel like career-wise, I can definitely thrive more post-lockdown in the office than I, even though, you know, our tech setup was great and it worked and, you know.
Yeah.
It was nothing wrong with it, but there's so much more that I can get out from being with people, like learning off the cuff. Like, I feel like that's an environment, like in line with our theme, thriving post lockdown, that I'm going to make the most of, is being around people and learning, as you know, on the job as you go, and those sort of like, oh, what's this and who's that and how do I do this?
Yeah, I think that's a massive positive to it, to be honest. And maybe I haven't been lucky enough to be exposed to that in this particular role at the moment, because obviously I started during lockdown. But for the limited times I have been in the office, I've experienced the exact same thing. And I'm definitely looking forward to leveraging that as well, because you do learn the most, well, in my opinion anyway, when you have kind of a sponsor almost, or a mentor or somebody there that's, you know, been through it. And yeah, you can have that discussion on Teams, of course, but it's just not the same. So I'll be making the most of that as I'm vaccinated and I'm ready to go back.
So funny you said about like mentor or sponsor. I recently wrote a blog on how I have benefited so much from a mentor. And my first sort of a mentor that I wrote about, I had actually just met in the office and walked up to her and asked her a question, and it organically grew from there. And then currently on a mentorship program that has been online, and we have even both said, wouldn't it be great when we can meet up in person? So I definitely feel that point.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
I think that with the physical space of the office, so I am a bit different because my ILTA role has always been remote. I'm a bit luckier because my colleagues are based in the US, and so they were used to remote working, whereas I've had the being based in London, I've had the plus of being able to physically meet with our members. So it was actually quite lovely for me to get a break from working from home to go to, because my meetings were in a different law firm every week. And it was so fun because it makes it more of a journey. And I think that when you're meeting with someone in an office or maybe in like a canteen, they're removed a bit from their immediate tasks. Whereas on something like Zoom, it's like, I just had this call and then now it's due. So I think that they don't bring themselves as much as when they physically change the space. Because I think we've underestimated that little walks into the lift to a meeting room. We've underestimated that a lot. But a lot tends to happen, you know, you bump into a colleague in another department or in the hallway. So much, you know, so many organic interactions happen that really helped us in ways that I don't think we can get directly and virtually.
Yeah, and actually before this call I had to put everything on do not disturb just to make sure that I was fully fit, because I know on calls there's little notification in the corner popping up that you just can't ignore.
Yeah, whereas you're not going to have that during Kurt's, you know, meeting with his manager in a lovely pub outside because it's gone.
Yeah, you'd have no chance being able to contact me there on the phone. I would 100% be on do not disturb. Yeah. But no, that is interesting as well, because I always get the same as well when it pops up at the bottom right. And just, I think I've woke up to the sound of that Teams call as well, that jingle that it has.
Did you see that advert that was on and it, that little ding-ling on the TV, that Teams advert, as soon as it comes on, I'm like,
it triggers something deep inside my brain. Yeah, some associations have been formed because of this lockdown. And sometimes I do have it, like I might be eating dinner or something and then just something just triggers it in my head. But it'd be nice not to hear that every single waking hour as well, because that's what it is, isn't it? That's the reality of working from home, is that Teams jingle haunts you.
But you managed to thrive during lockdown. So you said you started off in a service desk role, but when you introduced yourself, that's not the role that you're in now. So
yeah, so I am the newly appointed business analyst. So I moved from the service desk working in IT to the projects team. So I'd had some previous experience with that when I graduated. So I started my career working for Gowling, which is another law firm. So I was working as a business improvement analyst. So I had a deal of experience from them. But joining this firm, I started in the IT team. But since February, I've moved into projects. And now that role involves being seated between IT and the business. You probably can agree with that, Leanne, you know.
I was about to say, a big business analyst fan here, being one myself. But I'm keen to hear about, you know, how it differs, because I don't work in legal. So how does it,
from my understanding anyway, that's what it is. I'm almost a middleman. The IT have got the best understanding of, the PAs have got the best understanding of what goes on in their world as well. But there's a difference between the two. And it's about kind of managing stakeholders from each perspective to kind of make things happen and improve processes from either opinion, if that makes sense.
So just for those who don't know, when you said PA.
Yeah, so a PA would be somebody who works directly below a fee earner. So a fee earner would be a lawyer, for example. And a PA would be their personal assistant. So, somebody who's very much involved with the day-to-day business as usual from, you know, the business perspective. That's what I was referring to there. So we've had some kind of initial projects that I've been involved with where I kind of brought it from IT from my previous role before. So I've literally just delivered my first project, which was the first kind of milestone for myself in a new role, which was thank you very much. Yeah, it was a long time coming. So we had this kind of migratory piece from a data room provider where mm-hmm. our fee earners and lawyers used to kind of upload ongoing documents regarding to matters, and then they can share them externally. Mm-hmm. So the project was to actually migrate all 206 data rooms from one solution to the new one that we decided to use. So my role in that was not only, you know, the physical movement of data, but managing the stakeholders within the business and giving them ample time and knowledge to what was actually going on, and managing that whole process from start to end. And we successfully did complete that just last week, where I'd moved that over, and we had, you know, some real time critical matters where, you know, a deal was going to get signed on the date we were actually decommissioning. Mm. And it was about, you know, managing that and, you know, providing workarounds and just being open to their perspective, essentially. And that kind of like leads me on to kind of some of the skills, really. Yeah. About the BA, in my opinion, a lot of people assume that you need to be, you know, really technical, have like a whole host of previous knowledge to move up to, you know, this particular role. But really, it's soft skills that's the most important part of it, from my belief, you know, just being able to communicate with different people, you know, time management, and just being able to be an independent and a team worker at the same time. So a lot of people will probably have these skills and not even think that they could even take a step into this direction and be a BA. I don't know about yourself, but before I even started my education, I worked in JD Sports. I was working in retail and just working with customers and, you know, just general queries like, oh, I want this, I'm looking for this kind of, you know, apparel, and just being able to communicate with them and explain to them and, you know, tell them options. That was literally my beginnings, really. And
yeah. So that's so similar. So I worked in retail for 10 years from, you know, sales advisor up to retail mm-hmm. management. And some of the things that I do well are the skills that I've taken from those retail roles, being able to communicate at all different levels. So you said about stakeholder management, you know, mm-hmm. being able to communicate to a subject matter expert all the way up to a project sponsor and presenting to the people who sign off the money, and being able to adapt your communication style. At all those different levels,
it does seem like there's not much differences between doing your role in a legal context versus doing it in another organization. Because in as much as Kurt deals with maybe lawyers, it sounds like the service types that you're providing are quite similar, which is very interesting.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Everything you said, sort of that bridging that gap between the business and technology, is very relevant to my role. And I don't work in a legal industry currently. But it's interesting because I think there's that perception of that you need to have this knowledge. And there's that perception when you work on tech projects. I remember when I got put on my first tech project, I got put on a migration project. I was like, well, I haven't got a clue about any of this technology. I wouldn't know what a network is. I wouldn't know this, I wouldn't know that. But the point is if you have the skill to ask the right questions or communicate with the stakeholders, you can learn the tech on the way. You're not doing the actual...
Yeah, 100%. I think a big part of kind of how I've managed to do it and, you know, what I am learning as I go along is it's all about asking the right questions at the right time. And that's easier said than done as well. I'm not playing that down at all. That is probably one of the biggest parts of the role. But that stems from, you know, just asking lots of questions, loads of the time, you know, just keep on asking questions, document them, and you sort out what is relevant and what isn't. And then eventually you get to the point where you know when you approach a situation that these are the questions, or these, at the very least, these are the types of questions that need to be asked to draw the information out from the stakeholders.
And do you feel like what you've learned on the way, when you went into it, did you think, oh, I'm going to need to know all this technical stuff, and were you YouTubing everything? But what have you learned on the way in terms of your BA role?
My experience in this role so far has been a very personable one, and just having conversations with stakeholders and the right people, gathering requirements, for example, identifying opportunities and talking about problems, really, is probably the two big ones for me. And that's the most value I draw out from it. And it's the most interesting bit anyway, because you go out to people in the business. So I was talking to our printing room and about the way they approach and quote jobs and how we could basically make their job easier and provide better customer service for the rest of the business. And it could be a conversation as simple as, you know, what are your pain points in your day to day? And then, you know, you get that information, and then being able to kind of research and being interested in the area also helps as well, because then you can take that information and then you can go online and you can find a product and a solution that ticks off those requirements. And then, you know, you bring that back into the business, you present it to the higher ups, and then you say, well, can we go ahead with this trial? You know, for example, and then if you're good enough, you could probably have a conversation with a vendor and try and get a 6-month free trial or something like that, you know, and no cost to the business. And then what have you got to lose? And then if you can prove and you can demonstrate that there's an improved process or save time, save cost, then that's what you're supposed to be doing. That's the job of the BA from my point of view. Do you think is that the same thing with you?
Well, you said a lovely word, requirements. For those who don't know, it's a lot more detail and a lot more work goes into it about asking the right questions. You know, there's a lot of times you see, or you can, a lot of solutionizing. I'd like a button. And, you know, but you see your job, this is a really simple example, but what does the button do? And what happens when you press it? And what happens when it goes wrong? And what happens when it goes right? And how does it fit with the rest of your sort of aesthetic look that you've got? And all of these things that a BA has to consider when we talk about requirements and when we talk about developing technology. A lot of people think, oh, yes, Kurt, you said earlier, oh, I'm gonna have to have lots of technical skill to implement a button on an app. But actually, the BA role doesn't necessarily need that technical skill. They just need to be able to translate what it should be doing and what it needs to be doing, and what problem it fixes.
User stories and things like that.
I was wondering as well, based on what you said, so a lot of people think that you need to kind of have a law background to work in a firm. So I have two kind of questions. Do you think it matters understanding, you know, legal? And then secondly, you started in help desk and then went into your BA role. Would you recommend that? Does it help having that to get into learned organization that way? Or would you kind of say, no, you can jump into a BA role regardless and just get on with it? What would you, in kind of in hindsight, did your help desk background contribute towards the skills you've learned on the way?
Well, what the help desk role did definitely do is expose me to people in the business. So obviously the way that it works, people have a problem and they flag it to us, then we reach out to them and then we fix the problem, basically. So after that experience, I'd already kind of done the rounds, essentially, and I'd met quite a lot of people through there, you know, oh, my outlook's a bit slow today, can you help me out? And I'd jump on a call, and, you know, at the very least, you've introduced yourself after that first meeting. So it definitely helped in that way. It helped me get my face out there, and for me, put names to faces as well, and understand how, going forward, certain people respond to certain methods of interaction, how people like to be talked to, and this, that, the other, all these things help in the BA role. So it definitely did help me, but at the same time, I don't think it is a necessity at all, really. The first ever job I had outside of university was for a law firm, again referring to your first question. I had no idea how law firms work, didn't know anything about the business units, I didn't know about real estate, private family and client, I didn't know anything. I did not know anything. And I started as a business improvement analyst there. So I had like an opportunity for 12 months to get involved with the projects team there and just learn everything as I went along. And it was, again, those basic skills, those soft skills that came into play. And that's what helped me make a success of that, is just being open to learn and open to communicate. And I think that's another big part about it, is really just being willing, to be honest, because the BA role is quite hard to kind of pigeonhole, and it depends on the size of your firm, because at the moment with Howard Kennedy, we're relatively small. There's like around about 400 employees. So in terms of what can be in terms of a legal firm, we're relatively small. But at the same time, that gives me a lot more opportunities to get involved with a lot more things. So I don't have to be, you know, pigeonholed and put into a box. And that's the opportunity a lot of people get in our firm, is we don't have to just, you know, stay in a lane. we get the opportunity to open up and be involved in little things that might not necessarily be in the traditional description of that role, which I quite enjoy, to be honest. And at the same time, not only does it give you more opportunities, but I think the firm also acknowledged that as well. And since we obviously had our first introduction many months ago, I've been signed up. The firm have actually signed me up and are supporting me through business analyst diploma for an 18-month course.
Oh, wow.
So I get to obviously complete my portfolio and submit that to the actual apprenticeship. But I can build it all up from my experiences on my day-to-day role. So I'll get the opportunity to do like six separate qualifications and finish it with this international diploma, all of which has been promoted by the firm. So even like me, I've had a few years experience with being a traditional business analyst. But now I found myself in this situation where, you know, I think it's just more important to show that you're willing to learn. And then now I have the opportunity to actually focus on a really specific educational path, which is only going to help me in delivering the role that I've, you know, been employed to do.
Yeah, I think it's worth highlighting that a business analyst in different sort of firms or industries can do different things. But it's interesting because, Mercedes, you asked the question about, do you have to have a legal background? If anything, I think it can help not having a legal background from a business analyst perspective, because it's your job to understand the business process and to really nail down all of the little points and how does this work and how does that work? And if you have that understanding already, or you think you have that understanding of the industry, you maybe will make more assumptions or ask less questions.
You have the bias, don't you, when you understand the process? Yeah. Because that's the thing. I talk to a lot of fee earners, not even specific to Howard Kennedy, but because people do their job day to day, when they explain the process to you, they make omissions or assumptions, like you said, or they have this bias and they say, oh yeah, but we don't need to da da da, and they kind of skip past it. But then it's our job to be like, no way, let's look at this as a piece and see what we can do to kind of improve it. So yeah, I think that is that's a real good point you made there, that having no experience sometimes is a positive, really, because you can look at it a little bit more objectively than how you would otherwise.
And you're not stuck in there, well, that's how it's done in every law firm or in every industry.
We can't do anything about it. That's just how it is.
Whereas you can take any other experience and say, oh, I wonder why you haven't got that. So that bias. So I think, not having experience with the industry can sometimes be a benefit of a lot of the time, I think.
Yeah,
and I think it was very interesting because it's fundamentally reiterated that it's not really, you know, knowing everything and having expert level about the sector. It's really just understanding the company's vision and how they make profit, and essentially knowing how your role kind of helps that in that bottom line. Because regardless of whether it's legal or it's in the healthcare industry, it's a business and businesses function a certain way. So I think it's great that both of you have highlighted that fact, because it hopefully won't deter people looking to transition into different sectors, thinking, oh, I haven't worked in, you know, I haven't always worked in retail, or oh, I haven't always worked in insurance. So it just encourages people to, you know, try something regardless of their background. And especially because of the impact of the pandemic, people looking to diversify their roles or try other sectors should definitely, I think, try and explore legal if they're looking.
And I think Kurt nailed it right at the beginning where he said, oh, you know, I took my skills that I had when I worked in retail.
Yeah.
Being able to know your transferable skills and spot, you know, when you work in a store, I just thought, well, I just speak to customers. That's my job. But you don't realize that's such a skill that you can take. So being able to take your transferable skills and articulate them in another industry or another role is quite key to being able to progress, I think. I don't know if you'd agree, Kurt.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's interaction that's key, to be honest. I think one of the things that I've learned along the way as well is, especially in our role, is just to be interacting with the business as much as possible. Because if you understand how they work and understand the problems they face on a day to day, and even the opportunities that they could potentially face as well, helps you kind of be as effective as possible in the role. So, for example, since I've joined, we've had a bit of initiative within projects that, you know, ideas around the firm need to be captured, and it's these ideas that would help us be successful in delivering projects, essentially. So I've created like a business ideation submission form piece, cool, which we've kind of got some internal name and conventions for and whatnot, but it's open to the whole business. They could submit an idea, describe it, they can rate it as, you know, technical, non-technical. Then it gets pushed into kind of the collaborative teams part, where we have members around the business, all of which are different stakeholders and have different perspectives, and they can vote on it internally within teams. And then that kind of decides, you know, what I essentially will spend my time on. You know, if we've got an idea that's rated highly by all, maybe it's worth me then interacting with those stakeholders directly, creating a bit of a business case, and then presenting it to MC. So we just want to kind of promote ideas from the business, essentially, because it's difficult to kind of create a centralized place where you collect ideas and action them. That's the most important. It's, yeah, it's all very well and good, we can all say, oh, we've got an amazing idea, but it's about acknowledging it and then actioning it. So that's what we're hoping to push in the firm as well.
What a great culture to have, where you can submit ideas and have it addressed and, you know, asked more about it. I love it.
I think that's another privilege of being on the smaller side of a law firm as well, is that people have more of an impact, whatever point of the business they're in. Doesn't matter if, you know, they are a partner at the very top of the firm, or, you know, a PA who's interacting with, you know, their fee earners and external clients. Everybody has kind of their voice and opinion to raise ideas, and that's kind of the inspiration around it, really.
I think before we essentially wrap up, I have one question for both of you. I'd like to just ask you advice you would give to someone perhaps looking to get into the BA role, maybe with a bit of knowledge about what it might entail, and then consider someone that has no idea what their BA role is and who might be looking to pivot into this role. Do you have any advice you can share?
From my perspective, it's just not being too intimidated by the technical aspect of it. I'd like to think I'm quite technical myself. I'm quite interested in the area. So I kind of had that privilege where I could leverage some of my knowledge of that. But the thing is, technology is becoming more accessible all the time these days. You know, I remember, well, barely remember anyway, in the late 90s when the internet was, you know, a niche and it was reserved for a certain type of person. But nowadays, everybody's got access to the internet. You know, everyone uses technology, even if a person rates themselves as being like completely terrible with technology. You could probably use an app, you probably do use apps, and you don't even know it. So I think the biggest part is not being intimidated. I think it's probably the best time ever to get involved with technology. So if that is something that you feel inhibits you in your career, then don't be scared to start now, really. A lot of the innovations we've seen initially were quite intimidating, you know, user interfaces and things that look complicated. But nowadays, we've got smartphones and applications which are really specific use cases that have pulled away from more complex pieces of technology. So I think it's a perfect time to get involved. And to be honest, it's probably the most interesting time to get involved, because it's still early days. You look at how far we've come, but if you look into the future, there's so many more exciting things that are, you know, soon to be delivered. You know, we've got artificial intelligence, all of these different things, specific use cases, which will eventually trickle down into everyday life, you know. So why not get involved now? Even people who are, you know, involved in tech, they still have to go through this same learning journey as someone who doesn't know, because technology is always changing. So don't let that be a factor that, you know, pushes you away from getting involved. That's what I'd say anyway.
And sorry to put you on the spot here, but one thing that comes across from you and Leanne is there's a sort of a natural curiosity about technology. So in adding to that note, I'd be keen to get tips from both of you on, well, how do you demonstrate that? Because I'm sure that from a recruiter perspective, firms want to see that you have that interest in technology. So kind of in terms of showing that I am interested in technology and I can leverage my transferable skills to be a BA, what advice would you give around that? What could you do to show that, you know, I am, you know, I love technology and I'd love to work in it?
I mean, there's so much technology in businesses that you probably don't get as much exposure to if you don't work in technology, you know, things like IT infrastructure and networking and all this good stuff that is all going on in the background and enabling all of us to just carry on working. So I think being able to research different areas of technology in business is a good place to start. Like if you're in an organization with a tech department, which I'm pretty sure every organization has a tech department now, go and ask them, what's the score with your tech department? Like, what do you guys all work on? Because, you know, when I speak to people in my organization, they're like, wow, God, you guys do so much. I didn't realize. And then the only other thing I would say is, you know, even though all of that stuff is a bit more complicated and maybe a bit harder to get your head around, just start looking at the stuff around you. Like Kurt said, there's so much good stuff that's going on. I think, you know, not so long ago in Ealing, I think an Amazon store, you know, that you don't even have to pay for, well, you do pay, but you don't have to go to a till, opened up. That the technology, you walk in, it knows what you picked up and you walk back out. That's so cool technology. Have a research about it. How does it work? Like, look at stuff you're interested in and set up, you know, Google alerts for tech news, which I just get an email once a day that tells me all the latest cool stuff. And if I'm interested, I'll learn more about it. That's a really good way to show your interest, I think.
Yeah, I think it is important to kind of leverage these online communities because there's a community for everything now online. Like I was saying, just the internet used to be a niche, but it isn't anymore. So there's so much content out there that you can expose yourself to if you want to. And there's so many like-minded people on these communities and they want to help, they want to solve problems. And it is interesting because I had this experience a few months ago now when I was learning something called Power Automate. It's a Microsoft automation tool. And there was a guy on there who was really responsive as part of the community. And he was doing it because he wanted to add that to his CV and demonstrate that to employers that he was interested in technology. So he was helping out others, being really active on the forums, and he helped me out, and I, you know, and that inspires other people to carry on, because now I know a lot more than I ever did. Initially I had no idea what this platform was and never used it in my life. Interacted with it, came across a problem, asked someone how to do it, and they solved the problem, and now I know how to do it. So definitely, yeah, leverage what's available to you. It's all free of charge online.
Yeah, and I think don't be overwhelmed by the amount, like, and think, oh, I'll have to learn all Python and .NET and Java and website development.
None of you said coding.
There's so much that you can look into it and be like, do you know what, I'm never going to know all of this, so I won't bother. Most people who work in tech don't know every single person that works in tech does not know every single aspect because there's so much of it. Find the one that interests you the most and look at that.
That in gaming, isn't it? Because you have these gamer forums and it's actually not the people that created the game responding. It's users, you know, getting together and saying, well, I've reached this level. How do you do that? And that's basically you teaching someone how to use tech. So I definitely think we underestimate how much tech we use and the exposure we have, and knowing how to leverage that at the right time professionally.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, thank you both so much. It's been very interesting listening to different aspects of your career journeys. Thank you, Kurt. Thank you, Leanne. And thank if you've you. Made it this far on the podcast, thank you so much for listening. We're going to add some links to resources you can use to find out more about careers in technology.
Thanks for tuning into this ILTA Radio Fresh Voices episode. Check out more episodes and other ILTA podcasts on iltanet.org and all other podcast platforms.